But here we are, beginning of July, halfway through 2020. Let me ask you, how's it going so far? We're halfway through. Let me do a quick poll. Okay, I want to test something prior to the AGM next week. But here is a quick poll. Let's see here. Everyone answer this question in Zoom if you can. Are you a glass half empty person or a glass half full person? You can choose any one of those, half empty, half full. Who knows? I'm not going to give us too long here. I'm using my precious time. Are you a glass half empty person or a half full person? This is going to be an anonymous poll, which is also another way we will test for next week. All right, 5 more seconds. And here we go. Here's the results. Looks like we got a lot of half full people, 59%. Half empty people, 22%. Who knows? I love all those folks who just quite don't know. That's it. That's it for my nifty Zoom poll test feature. In the 6 short months since our last week of prayer back in January, we have faced a global pandemic. We've seen isolation and lockdown. We've seen the rise of protests in for justice over the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. I had a friend in the States send me a WhatsApp message trying to get his head around 2020, and he said it like this: "We are all in that difficult space known as just trying to figure things out. 2020, it has thrown a lot our way, and it doesn't seem to be chilling out anytime soon." This is what he wrote. He said, "Our hearts are broken because of racism and injustice, and for the devastation of the COVID pandemic globally. And many of us are carrying other heavy things at the same time." And so the leadership team has been waiting and watching as well in the lead up to this week of prayer. And meanwhile, I know a number of you have asked us, hey, what is the Spirit saying to us right now as a church about racial injustice? And a number of you have asked, how can we as a church be a part of the important conversations that are happening right now in society around us? And so we've met as a team and we've had a talk through and just inquired of the Lord, how do you want us to engage this? And we have a few ideas. You'll be hearing about some of those in the days and weeks to come. But meanwhile, with the week of prayer and fasting upon us, I could think of no more relevant passage for us to look at together tonight than Isaiah 58. So if you can open those Bibles to Isaiah 58, I'm going to just read it for us. I want to keep moving here just because of time. So Isaiah 58. I'll read the entire chapter. It's just 14 verses here. It's the prophet Isaiah saying, "Shout it aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the house of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions. They seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves, and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and to not turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help and he will say, 'Here am I.' If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight, the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Let me give you a setup for what Israel was like then. Isaiah here is speaking to people who were really competent at religious rituals. They would do all the right things on the outside, but inside their relationships were a mess. Look at verse 2. He says, day after day, they seek me out. They seem, in inverted commas, to eager to know me. They seem eager for me to come near. They've had a whole bunch of weeks of prayer and fasting under their belts. Israel asks, what is the point of all this anyways? You know, they say, why isn't it working? Look at verse 3. Why have we fasted and you've not seen it? You haven't noticed. And it's one thing to notice. They think they're doing all the right things the right way, but there's still a whole area of sin where they remain blind to their spiritual condition. And in verse 1, God has something to say about it. He calls it rebellion. He calls it sin. They think they're doing the right thing, and he tells Isaiah to make some noise about it. Isaiah, wake my people up to the way that they're living. Israel says, something feels off in our relationship with God. We're seeking you, but we're not hearing from you. We're fasting even, but it doesn't seem like you've noticed. See, Israel is just feeling disoriented as a people. But let me just pause right there and say, Isaiah 58 is pointing out to us that there can be times when we think we're okay, when we think that we've done all the religious stuff, at least on the outside, and yet there can still be rebelliousness and sin to which we might be completely blind, of which we can be entirely ignorant. Isaiah is saying, we can think we're doing okay and still miss the point. So they needed a couple of trumpet blasts to get their ears to attention. Let me ask you this, what are the things right now in our world that are like trumpet blasts telling us that we might be in the wrong? And then it says, you do as you please. Look at the second half of verse 3. Pay attention to that phrase. We're going to come back to it a little bit later on. Isaiah points out through the voice of God, your relationships are not right. This is what we would call social sin, not just personal or interpersonal, though it includes that, but it's broader than that. Look at what gets included. Verse 3, exploitation of workers. Arguments in verse 4. It results in violence. God says, let me just reframe your expectations right now. If you think you can do this religious stuff to get my attention and still be treating me and other people this way. Look at the end of verse 4. Do you think that's acceptable? He asks. God's saying, let me tell you what I have in mind. When you have a week of prayer and fasting, I want you to acknowledge and destroy all of the ways that you are harming people who bear my image. That's collective, systemic injustice. Look at the language in verse 6. Loose the chains. Untie the cords. Set the oppressed free. Break off the burdens. And look, regardless of our views on the current cultural moment, we can't deny that a whole lot of the world right now is being asked to consider matters of systemic injustice. And they're asking, where have we contributed to or benefited from systems of injustice, abuse of power, or racism? Like it or not, some people really want to talk about it right now. And if Isaiah is right that God cares about this kind of stuff, then we as followers of Jesus need to be willing to have these conversations and do some soul searching as well. Now, another thing about all of this is how we're meant to read it. We're not just supposed to read this as individuals, which is so tempting for us, but collectively, it's a shared responsibility that we hold together. And I think that means that even though we're used to reading it, when it's spoken to people collectively, we tend to hear it individually. And that really suggests that there's some ways that we need to listen to this as a shared responsibility That really there's the presence, there is an existence of presence, collective, corporate sin and injustice. And so there's not really a way for any one of us to say, well, you know what, actually, I've kind of got this thing covered, the whole Black Lives Matter, anti-racism, I've got myself sorted out for this, thanks. Because there's always something that we collectively together could be doing differently. But you know what, it doesn't just stay there at the systemic big picture level, it goes personal. It goes to personal responsibility and compassion. Look at verse 7. God moves us from society as a whole to the personal, speaking to people and to households. He says, next time you fast, Isaiah, share your food with the hungry. Welcome people into your homes. When you see someone who needs clothes, help them out. Don't just turn away from people around you who are human, just like you. And this is what gets my attention, God says, verses 8 and 9, more than your religious rituals. It's when you've done the hard work of caring for the poor, as well as working to change patterns of injustice at work around you. It's both deeply personal and it's systemic. And to see where I'm getting this, you can look at the next couple of verses. Look at the next part of verse 9, where Isaiah sort of summarizes with a second round. He says, if you do away with the yoke of oppression, that's systemic, and with the pointing finger and malicious talk, that's personal, that's direct. And verse 10, if you spend yourselves, that's personal, on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, that's social, that's systemic. Then, and here's some of the promises, then your light will break forth. You'll see healing and righteousness. You'll be guarded by God's glory. The Lord will answer and you will call for help. Then what seems dark to you will become bright. You'll know God's guidance. He will satisfy your needs. You'll be strengthened. You'll be replenished and refreshed like a well-watered garden, or like my garden after the last couple of weeks of rain. Friends, there's not really any way around it. Isaiah 58 seems to be saying that it matters to God how we treat each other, regardless of race, class, or position. This stuff matters to God. So much so that there's no real way to be in right relationship with God when we're not in right relationship with people who are made in his image. In fact, Isaiah goes even further. He says, instead of tearing people down, we as God's people can be a part of the solution. Look at verse 12. We can be rebuilders and repairers and restorers. Not just of individual people, but of the very fabric of society, its foundations, its walls, the streets where people live. Okay, so in the last couple of weeks, as I've been looking at this passage and thinking about everything that's going on in the world right now, and thinking about the week of prayer and fasting coming up, and I've thought, yes, Isaiah 58 is perfect because it kind of speaks to all of this, justice, fasting, how we are with people, even our pointing fingers and our quarreling attitudes. But I keep getting stuck at this part right here. How does it change my fasting this week? I mean, what difference does it actually make in my day-to-day? See, it's one thing to read up on anti-racism or work against injustice or even share my food and my clothes with the vulnerable around me. But what's at the heart of all of this? How does doing any of that not just become another empty religious ritual, just like rigorous fasting, if you think about it? And then I saw this. Look at verse 13. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, verse 14, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And it's that phrase in verse 13, doing as you please. That's the second time we've seen it in this chapter. It first showed up in verse 3, on the day of your fasting, you do as you please. And just to underscore the point, it shows up here again for a third and fourth time in verse 13, not going your own way or doing as you please. And I saw that and I thought, that is totally it. I want things to go my way. I want things on my terms. I so easily want to do what pleases me instead of what pleases God. And so Israel is getting called out in Isaiah for doing fasting on their own terms and Sabbath on their own terms. And you know what? When I become accustomed to having power and influence, I get used to things being according to what pleases me. I'll engage a week of prayer and fasting as long as it's to my liking. I'll do stuff with my GSM patch as long as it can go the way I want it to go. I'll even have the hard conversations about race and equality As long as it can be on my terms. Friends, I think that that's what's at the heart of all of this, whether it's about true fasting or the cause of justice, wanting life to be on our own terms, the way we like it, instead of the way that's good for others or the way that's pleasing to God. That got me thinking about the horrible injustice that Jesus faced on the cross, how he endured inhumane torture and death at the hands of Roman soldiers, the people in power of his day. How he gave up his own personal power to be punished in my place for my personal sins and for our societal sins. He endured God's perfect love and perfect justice. I think about all of that and I say, that's not how I would do it. Surely it didn't have to be that way. But even Jesus himself, God's very son, went through that suffering for us willingly, praying to his father only hours before all of this. Father, this is not what I want. But if it's what you want, I surrender my life on your terms, not on my terms. Friends, Jesus's life, death, and resurrection not only shows us the way to restored relationship with God and restored relationship with other people, he shows us the way, and he is the way. Jesus's act of self-sacrifice and his resurrection power enables us to be free from living life on our own terms. See, we saw this in Philippians in chapter 2, didn't we? Malcolm spoke to it. Make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being in one spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same attitude of mind that Christ Jesus had. So, if you're wondering, how am I going to engage this week of prayer and fasting? Maybe consider this. If you haven't thought about what am I going to give up this week just as a week of prayer to enter into this, or a week of fasting, maybe consider this. Try fasting from having your own way. Try fasting from doing life on your terms. Maybe there's a challenging decision that you face. Maybe there's a conflict with someone that you need to resolve. Maybe you have a preference for how church should be going forward or how your patch should look. Maybe it's how you think things at work should be. You know what? Try fasting from your own power, from control, from self-reliance, whatever you want to call it. If that sounds familiar, it's a very similar list to what we covered in January during our Smashing Idols series. It's the same stuff. So you might object right now, saying, haven't we already had weeks and months of life not being on our terms, things being different than how we really want them to be? I mean, come on, that's enough. And I would say yes, but there is a really big difference between being hungry because you have no access to food and being hungry because you've chosen to go without it. There's a power to choosing to lay down your power or influence to have things not be on your terms. So, Good Shepherd Mission, this week, let's be waiting and watching for what the Lord is doing in our midst, in us personally, and in our church fellowship, and on the streets around us as we walk and as we pray. And as we watch what God is stirring up in 2020 with a global pandemic that is far from over, and in the stirring up of these conversations around race and equality, let's be the kind of people, by God's grace, that do the hard work of justice, who maintain right relationships with one another, and who keep Christ at the center of everything, and who seek the things that please God instead of doing things as we please. Then you will find your joy in the Lord, and you will feast on the inheritance of your faith. Amen.